Welcome to Tom Papa's Come to Papa.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Come to Papa, your favorite podcast among all the other podcasts on the podcast universe. We are back at the compound.
We are.
Finally, in full force.
I should probably take a picture of you. This is like quintessential Tom.
Why? What's going on?
Because you've got your red flannel.
Yeah.
A bottle of wine.
Yeah.
And jelly beans.
I feel like I don't rock the flannel that often.
In a cigar box. It's like every... It's Tom being half Hemingway, half Steve Jobs.
Yeah, well, it is becoming the season, right? I mean, here we are. We're in the middle of November.
Yeah.
It's time to forget trying to stay in shape, forget trying to reach your goals of not drinking, forget all of your aspirations of being a better you, and just settle into whatever you are and eat, drink, and be merry.
Yeah, just find a winter coat that makes you look the least amount of fat as possible.
I have to go into the cold tomorrow.
Oh, man.
Wisconsin, Viroqua, and Oshkosh. Tomorrow night and Saturday night.
You're the king of Wisconsin, though.
I know, man. I've been Wisconsin, the whole upper Midwest. Wisconsin, North Dakota, Michigan. I've just been living up there for the last year.
Right.
And tomorrow, I mean, the shows will be great, but it's a couple flights to get in there, and it's going to be so cold. It was like 15 degrees.
Well, I was in Chicago last week, and I made it 4 hours before the blizzard hit.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you didn't see that?
No, I didn't even know a blizzard hit.
Like Monday morning, there was like a plane that spun off the runway.
What?
And they got like a snowstorm. Yeah.
What? In Chicago?
In Chicago, yeah.
Man, how did I miss that?
Yeah, and it was like I got a later flight on Sunday just to sleep in a little bit because it's been so crazy, and it was a huge mistake. I should have just got out of there early. I still was fine, but...
Yeah, a little more stress.
Yeah.
This is not the time of year. It's conflicting. This is not the time of year to fly through Chicago because, well, no time really is because in the summer, the thunderstorms are just as bad. In the winter, it's delays from all the blizzards and snows. It's usually not the best time. But I will say this, if you are one that enjoys the holiday season, the Chicago airport, O'Hare Airport, is beautiful.
Really?
You have this high ceiling. High arch ceilings, and it's all decked out, and it definitely puts you in the in a good mood walking through there when you're finding out that your flight is canceled.
Yeah, but it's one of those bad ones for, like the rental car place is like 20 minutes away, and you have to take a shuttle, and you've got to do this and do that.
It's not an easy spot.
Yeah, so it's like...
And getting downtown is rough.
Yeah.
It's not easy. That's a tough place. To but do the quick in and out there is ain't no picnic.
Yeah, so I didn't tell you I went to the... So I got in like a night early because you don't want to risk it. And
right.
So I have two friends with the Blackhawks.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to the Blackhawks hockey game on
Players?
Thursday night. The vice president.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah.
How do you know him?
Through... I did a show for like a charity thing there.
Nice.
And so he went to Blackhawks game and the Canucks...
Oh, how was that?
And it was a shootout. It was 7-2, something like that. Yeah, so I saw some goals.
I was just talking about this yesterday because, you know, baseball's over.
Mm-hmm.
The
football's over.
Football's over. And I'm faced with a choice here. Do I dive back into hockey, which there's a ton of games on?
Yeah.
Or college basketball. You can always watch one of those games.
NBA is big, especially in LA, because the Clippers got Kawhi Leonard, who won the NBA title with the Raptors and brought his all-star buddy there, Paul George.
Is that fun?
Well, they're legitimately like the best team in LA, and there's still LeBron, who brought this other amazing player in, Anthony Davis, and
mm-hmm.
they have... I think they only have one loss. So they're
really?
Yeah, so those are two,
I remember you saying the Lakers wouldn't be good for years.
Well, they got this Anthony Davis guy. Yeah. They brought him in. He's like the best center in the league. So
where's he from?
He was in New Orleans, and like at the end of the season, just decided to not play anymore because he didn't want to get hurt.
So he just stopped.
Which is weird because they got that Zion, the super athlete guy from Duke. Like so they would have been actually pretty good if he had stayed, but he came to play LeBron. So
yeah, maybe I should. I don't know. Pro basketball.
Well, it's
all the cool kids watch it.
Well, especially in LA, that's the only thing, because usually the Warriors are amazing, and they're actually the worst team in the NBA right now.
Are they really?
Yeah, they're like 1-8. So
well, that won't last.
Steph Curry's hurt. Klay Thompson, they lost everybody. So, so it's
kind of
weird.
So it's kind of a new exciting era for the NBA where other teams can scramble and become good. How about your Celtics?
Well, the Celtics have the best record in the league, and the Lakers, they're like tied for the best. So that's always good for
the NBA. A little throwback
NBA.
To the 80s.
Yeah, for the NBA anyway.
So your recommendation, hockey, college basketball, or NBA?
I'm What's always your NBA, advice? But if there's something like for just in LA, it's cool when like you know the Rams are good and the one of the team. I hate the Lakers, but if the
I'm
Clippers
not
are
watching
good,
the Rams,
why not?
I just watch the Red Zone and then bet and try and watch whatever cool game, whatever game is in the snow.
Yeah.
You know, the Giants are the worst team in football, so...
It's crazy.
They're worse than the Jets.
So, but the interesting thing is, so this weekend, I'm not going, because I finally had, like, a day off, but Giant Stadium is almost sold out for the Cortland-Ithaca game, which is, like, a Division III football game.
Jeez.
And, it's crazy. It's called the Cortica Jug. You know how you have, like, these regional little games?
Yeah.
And it's become, like, this big, huge thing. And so they decided to have it at Giant Stadium.
That's
and
fun.
And my buddy Kevin Connors is the ESPN, like, Sports Center anchor now. He went to Ithaca. So he's going to, like, do play-by-play for the game. And it's this
Saturday.
So
I can tell you're tempted to go.
It would be fun. Everyone keeps asking me, and everyone is trying to go. Like, it's one of those things, like, when is this going to happen again?
Right.
Like, Giant, you know, and especially since nobody goes, they're going to have more people than the regular Giants games at this.
That's hilarious. I guess that you're reminding me that we do have a lot of good college bowl games coming up. And, you know, we could still watch some NFL. But I do feel like there's that void.
Well, you liked hockey at one point, right?
I did. I loved hockey. When I was in New York, I was a Ranger fan, and we were running for the Cup, and then they were terrible for 12 years.
Yeah.
But the Rangers are good again now. I did like hockey. Maybe I should get into hockey.
I don't know.
But NBA, it seems like I'm missing something if I don't watch that.
Yeah. Like the Clippers, you should, like, if you ever went to a Clipper game, Laker fans are, like, annoying. They're kind of like, you know, Red Sox and Patriot fans, like, too much.
It's a little elitist. How about the, I don't want to make this all about sports, but how about our Houston Astros?
Oh, the cheaters?
The cheaters.
So nothing was ever legitimate?
They just cheated the Yankees out of 2017?
Yeah.
And did they cheat this year, too, or that story
Definitely.
Is just...
Definitely, yeah.
So that they're saying that they just cheat all the time?
Well, I don't know if you remember this. I don't know why I remember this, but when we were watching the games, there was, like, this weird whistle and like from the stands, and that's what they were using this year instead of the bang.
Really?
Yeah. So, and remember, you know how, like, you go to a soccer game and there's, like, some weird horn or something?
Yeah.
It was, like, I swear I noticed that, and then
really?
When I read it in the report, I was like, oh, those sons of...
So the Yankees put together these two great teams, and they both got knocked out by Houston.
Well, it looked like they knew what pitch was coming, and it turns out they did.
Jeez Louise. So what's going to happen? You think there'll be any ramification? They can't. They never go back.
I think the baseball is always so protective of, like, the integrity of the game that they don't ever like blast. They don't want anything to seem illegitimate. Like they
so
try
they
to,
won't even find them.
They'll even like you know they even made a you know some kind of statement like there's a few other teams involved, but like
oh,
you know,
man,
blah blah blah.
That's so terrible.
Yeah. That's and it was
because it was especially because it was our team that they knocked out.
Well, it was two like ex pitchers who confirmed it. Because I think you know they wouldn't have outed it, but there was a guy that did like all this research and kind of knew, and then even had tapes from last year and this year, and like and then confirmed it with guys who of course aren't on the team anymore. So
jeez, Louise, big fat.
So they had they had a camera in center field to see the signs in the dugout,
right?
And then somebody would either whistle or bang if it was like an off speed pitch.
So everyone on that team was in on it.
Yeah,
and that's why it leaked because enough people were involved.
Well, yeah, and it became so obvious, I guess, to at least people who were there.
Did
like,
the Yankees make a statement?
No.
Ooh.
I mean, they're still. You know, they might end up getting. You know, that one Cole was the pitcher.
We might get Cole.
They might end up getting him and Strasburg. So that would be amazing.
God.
But yeah, that sucks when there's like cheating that dirty.
Yeah.
You know, it's like,
oh, and it's that obvious and everybody knows. It just, ugh, it's so gross.
Kind of makes you feel like the pitcher should just pitch then. Right?
Kind of makes me think I should just watch Turner Classic Movies and forget all this nonsense.
When there was no cheating in 1919.
Well, you need low stakes. Maybe college is the way to go. Well, there's high stakes in that too. I have to watch. We should be going to your bowl game. We need Division III college where people don't make enough money on it to cheat.
Yeah. Yeah, that's and the weird thing is so I coached at Cortland State. That's where I kind of played, and they always have like a pretty good team. But Ithaca College is like a good communication school. There's a lot of broadcasters and stuff out of there, and the best player on that team is from my high school. This guy's been like an All-American for like 3 years in a row.
Cool.
And he may end up getting drafted from like Division III, which is pretty amazing.
Wow, so, that is amazing.
Yeah.
All right, but more importantly, let's shift focus. There's enough sports going around. We could always find something, I guess. What are your Thanksgiving plans? I'm hearing distressing news through the grapevine that you will be spending Thanksgiving on an airplane or in an airport?
Well, I'm trying. There's two issues because, as you know, this schedule has been insane for me. Like, you have twice as much travel as I do, but it just seems like I'm busy every single day.
Yeah.
So there's two things that I am concerned about. I'm concerned that I'm flying on Thanksgiving Day from the East Coast to get back to here. And then I'm also flying on New Year's Eve, like in the afternoon.
That one I love.
Why is that?
I love because New Year's is a, you know.
Well, you never work on New Year's, right?
No, unless it's a really amazing offer.
Right.
To stay with the family and hang, and it's nice and mellow. But when the kids are gone and you're looking for something to do, like we made it a family thing, so that's
right.
Where our focus is. But once they're not involved in every New Year and they're going to go hang with their friends and stuff, traveling on that day, the airport's so mellow, everyone else is running around. That's like a good holiday to fly on. The Thanksgiving flying isn't, I don't approve of that at all.
Well, they were telling me, like, day of Thanksgiving, it's actually really good to travel. And I'm like, I don't think so.
I think it probably is a little, I mean, it's definitely lighter than the day before.
Right.
But that's the worst night of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't care about the airport part.
Right.
You know, New Year's Eve, you fly, and then what, you miss hanging out at an awkward party, you know.
Right.
You could probably count the number of amazing New Year's in one hand.
I'm also flying out of Belize City.
Why not stay there for New Year's? That might be cool.
I would if I knew there wasn't going to be a civil war happening. Right?
Oh, is
I'm
there?
Not sure.
In Belize?
I think there's stuff going on there.
Oh.
That
maybe you want to cancel that trip
somebody
entirely.
Somebody who looks like me might not be.
Oh, geez. But what's the Thanksgiving thing? Where are you the night before Thanksgiving?
So I'm doing this, it's like another kind of little cruise thing that I'm doing, but I get to see my parents. That's why I'm doing it.
Because
so.
The flight, it docks in Florida?
It goes to Tampa, Key West, and Cozumel.
In that order?
Yeah. And I go to Cozumel. I start in Cozumel, goes Tampa, Key West, then back there. So I have to fly back from Cozumel, which the only place you can go to is like Miami or Atlanta, and then you have to take another flight. So
So you, the night before Thanksgiving, you dock in Cozumel.
No, the day of Thanksgiving, I get off, and then I
go right to the airport,
and then try to get here as soon as I can.
Oh, my God.
So right now I'm getting here at 8, which is like time for either you're going to be passed out or you're smoking a cigar on the deck, maybe.
But yeah. Yeah.
Who's going to be here?
It'll probably be pie time. We've got Aaron is coming. Very
maybe I'll
Aaron
be
Foley.
Your second win. Maybe it'll be like lagging, and then I'll just come in with sparklers and stuff. And be
yeah,
like,
that
hey,
would be good.
Thanksgiving Paul's here.
Oh, yeah. That means you're not going to be able to participate in the pie off because you're going to have to hold off till Christmas, I guess, with that because you can't roll in with a pie.
Let's see.
You'll be coming.
Well, if the Astros can cheat, I could just have like some kind of chef make one and then
that's
just
true.
Bring it.
Just pick it up on the way.
Just keep your daughter on her toes. Make her keep improving every year.
Cozumel, isn't that Mexico?
Yeah.
So you got to go all the way to Miami?
Well, it's on that side.
Damn.
It's an island.
You should be coming to Houston and then to, right?
I don't know.
Going to Miami seems like a, you're adding
well,
like four
I'm just
more
saying
hours.
Like the quickest, well, at least the flight that they got me, I'm going Miami to LAX.
I'm going to look it up on a map right now. Why are we trying to figure it all out?
But you're right. The flight to there is through Dallas-Fort Worth, but that's still like another four-hour flight, which you don't really think about, right? It doesn't feel like it's that far away.
Yeah.
And you know what? I almost got on board. Well, I guess I am officially on board with the Tom Papa Airlines, American Airlines.
Really? Yeah, I'm wondering if I'm going to get concierge key this year. It really feels like they should make that for me. Yeah. You're kind of directly south of Louisiana. You're right in the middle of Miami. And I mean, if you could head west, it would definitely save you a little.
Can I rent a boat?
Yeah, if you can get to Houston, you should go to Houston. You shouldn't be going to Miami.
Yeah.
You should go Houston, and then you're here in time for turkey. That's what you should be doing.
Well, I'll do my best. I'll see if...
And New Year's, you said, is Belize?
Belize City.
That's like a couple hours from Cozumel.
Yeah.
So funny. Well, I think that...
Those are my two big trips.
I think you got to take a look at your flights. It doesn't seem like it's good planning at all. Not that my planning is...
Wait, what's concierge key?
Ooh. It's the holy grail of American Airlines.
But did you earn that, or did you get that from that guy at the show?
You have to... I don't have it.
Oh, okay.
Only a select few people have it. I'm already executive platinum for
right.
this year.
That's pretty cool.
That's
the best, right?
That's as high as you can go. And then there's this secret society called Concierge Key. Before they board anything, they announce, if you're Concierge Key, please come up. And before anybody with disabilities, with anything, you just Concierge Key.
So you
and
step over the handicapped people to get on the plane?
Yeah, they have to wheel you down there themselves. And they don't, there's no like parameters for it. I think it's everyone that has it seems to be people that travel like 200,000 miles.
Or if you spend a lot of
like
money, right?
Or they're like a million milers or whatever. But they just tell you that you're concierge key. They don't. There's nothing like on your app that says, here's your goal and you can get it. You don't know. You just do what you do. And eventually, if you have a podcast and a radio show and you talk about them enough, maybe they would love to turn you into concierge key, and so you'll continue talking about their airline and the beautiful experience. They'll come meet you at the gate and drive you sometimes on the tarmac to your connecting flight.
What?
There's a lot of extra little, yeah.
That's crazy.
I know.
Do you meet famous people that are also getting driven in those little carts?
You know, it's interesting when you watch it, like I can tell at the boarding, like they're not famous people per se, but there are people that seem like they travel a lot. You know, you can just tell the people that are dialed in, they have the right amount of carry-on. They just, you know, people that have their act together.
They could kill people with a phone call.
It's not Johnny family who you know, does it once in a while and is jumping the line and panicky.
Right, right.
These people kind of, you could tell relaxed. They have their act together. I'm wondering if I get it, if I reach a million miles.
You got to be close, right? Because I'm like, I haven't even been keeping track, and I'm like 200,000, I think.
Away?
No, like, I'm just like 200,000. I only started with American like a couple years ago.
Oh. Yeah, for my million mile thing, I think I'm only like 150 away.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Which if I get that, then maybe then they'll give it to me. I don't know. I have a friend of mine who's like 4 million miles from
oh, really?
His whole career, yeah.
Do you know anybody else who's concierge key?
Yes. There was one guy from NBC who was a production guy, and he was back and forth with New York and LA for like 10 years. Mm-hmm. So he's over a million, you know, well uh-huh. over a million. That's the only other one I know. Yeah, you would think, you know, I feel like they're probably having a meeting right now discussing...
Talking about it.
...whether or not to make Tom Papa concierge key.
If you bring them bread...
Yeah, they would get bread, they would get shout-outs on the podcast. You know, there's a lot of benefits for them if I am concierge.
I will say how nice they were because I did get this flight and I don't have any status, and I was kind of like, I couldn't even pick a seat. And like earlier in the year, I did one of those challenges and I met it and they never gave me the status. And then the lady's like, okay, I'll just give it to you now for the rest of the year.
Oh, nice.
And I was like, oh, that's really cool.
No, I have no problem. I think they're great, honestly, you know. And because I'm going to the Upper Midwest a lot, I'm having to take Delta because they right. own the whole Upper Midwest.
Yeah.
And it's so weird when you leave like your godlike status on one airline and
right.
then you come on the other one and you're like, they have no idea who I really
you're
am.
Back with the herd.
Yeah, it's rough. Hey, today's podcast is supported by our good friends at Manscaped. Who is the best in men's below-the-belt grooming.
Manscaped. But it can be above, too, though, right?
It depends. You could, yeah, I guess you could turn the razor and the trimmer up top. But
yeah.
This is really solving the problem for people who, men particularly, who need a little work down below.
A little how do you do?
When you're a young man, you don't really think about it very often, and then you start... becoming involved with ladies and other men, perhaps, and you realize I got to take care of business down there.
I feel
everything
like
else
this
is manicured. Why not down there?
Yeah, this is the talk you would have had if you had a son. I feel like
you're right. I'd be like, come on, kid, get it together. Their Lawnmower 2.0 has proprietary advanced skin-safe technology so the trimmer won't nick or nab you in your family jewels. It's also waterproof, so you can use it in the shower.
Oh.
Yeah. So, you know, if it's time to, you know, it's the holidays. Who knows what's going to happen to you? You're a single man. You're out there going to Cozumel and Belize. Who knows how many people are you going to meet up with? And the people in Mexico, you think they're not well-groomed and taking care of things? You're going to look like a barbarian.
Yeah, there's a lot of Speedos down there.
Yeah, good point.
Trim it up.
But really, all their stuff is really great. Their crop preserver is like a almost like an aftershave. And, you know, it seems like it should be a part of your body that gets more attention than any other. And no one has given you the tools to do that until Manscaped. And right now... you can get 20% off and free shipping with the code PAPA
nice.
At manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. Use the code PAPA. Clean up your stuff and make Santa proud.
Nice. Because shipping is usually how they get you, and this is free shipping.
Yeah, come on, man. You can do it. So I really feel like as we move towards the holidays... you're going to have to consider what you're going to do with the ladies because you're going to be traveling a lot. Either you play it like a traveling playboy, Right? You're a single guy. You start traveling in suits. You're jet-setting around from the lounges. You have a lady in each town, in each port. And you're kind of like James Bond. They know you're not going to stick around. You make no bones about it. You're just there to do your job and get out of town, and we might as well spend an evening together if you're up for the adventure.
Well, that's the thing, is like, you talk about this, like, there's all this crazy free time. Like, you know how much time you have when we do a show.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't even eat dinner in, where was that?
Oh, yeah, in Detroit.
In Detroit. I grabbed a slice of pizza while we were waiting for an Uber.
Yeah.
And you're like, no, I don't want anything. Let's go.
Yeah. Well, I had to.
You had to leave the next morning.
Yeah,
so.
Like 5 in the morning. We stayed by the airport because I had to just split and then go do another show. So it's not like, I didn't have any time.
Yeah, that's literally what this has been, is like, I did a show last night in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And I drove because I didn't want to deal with airports. And on the drive back, I got another show on the way.
Right.
So I literally didn't get home until after I did that second show, like at midnight.
Man, oh man.
And then so this is like...
That's exciting.
The first few hours that I've had to like relax.
Isn't it funny when you think like a day off is just doing like a radio show and a podcast?
Right.
You're like, that's your day off. I was excited to go to the Comedy Store last night. Because I haven't been there since I did the special a couple weeks ago.
You know,
I did some shows. We did Detroit and a couple other spots. I did Cleveland. And then, which was great, by the way. Always good to be at Hilarity's. People came out in mass, which was great. And then, but I haven't been working out, just in town, having a good time at the store. And I went in last night, and it was so nice. I didn't do one thing for my act. I just was bold. And I was like, I had some funny ideas. And just did those. It felt so... freeing after being so dialed in for so long.
Right.
It was so nice. I got a couple things that had real potential, you know, and I'm not going to say I crushed with it, but it didn't matter. It was just about being bold enough to go out and just no ramifications, try out all this new stuff in the original room, and it was,
you get that new laugh. It's
good. Yeah, I just drove home like I felt better than I had all year.
That's great.
I know.
It was your birthday.
Yes, it was.
Everybody, happy
birthday,
Tom.
That's where this bottle of wine came from, by the way.
Nice.
Our good friends at Netflix sent this over.
What kind of wine is it?
It's a beautiful bottle of Cabernet from Silver Oak.
Ooh.
It's a nice bottle of wine. And I have to get up at 5 tomorrow to go to the airport, or otherwise I would be drinking this tonight.
So what is, like,
I think this will be Sunday when I get back.
But is Cabernet like a regular, like, drinking wine, or is that like the after dinner one?
No, it's a regular wine. Cabernet Sauvignon. It's a deeper, heartier red.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So that's what you usually go with?
Yeah, if I'm drinking California, usually Cabernet or Pinot. I'll drink that too. That's lighter.
Right.
And then Merlot. I always liked Merlot, but then when Sideways came out, remember the movie Sideways with Giamatti?
Yeah.
And he was a wine expert in his character, and he was talking about how poetic it was to drink Pinot.
Right.
And that it was just so subtle and had all of these tones. And if you really knew wine, that's what you would drink. And Merlot, ugh. It was like drinking like new Coke or something. And that movie really affected the market.
Yeah.
People literally were like, oh, I can't drink Merlot. They were embarrassed to drink Merlot.
Mm-hmm.
I was too. I was like, I guess I don't know what I'm talking about. But Merlot is, I like it. It just, for me, it just is nice and light. It's kind of in between Cabernet and Pinot. It's very soft tasting.
Right.
It's got like this nice... a lightness, but not as light as Pinot Noir, and maybe I'm not as sophisticated as his character wanted me to be.
Well, he seemed
I like stuff
unhappy.
To be a little earthy. Yeah, he didn't. He wasn't doing well. I like things to be a little earthier, and for me, a red wine that tastes like tobacco, like a cigar box,
right.
Or like an old leather shoe.
You're not winning. winning me over with
deep
this.
Berries, like that kind of like oaky. Deepness, I like that a lot. Sometimes these California Cabernets can be a little too alcoholic, and they try and be too big.
Uh-huh.
Is that the way they describe it, which I think is accurate. Jim Harrison, who was this great writer who I read a lot, he would say, he loved French wines, and he always said that California wines were like paint. Mm-hmm. They were so thick and syrupy that they were like paint.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Sometimes Cabernets get like that. But if you're not picky, you know, we live in California. There's a lot of great wines there.
Right.
And when he was writing that, you know, that was 20, 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of great wines that come from California, too. So you just find what you like. Anyway, I have had this bottle before, the Silver Oak, and it is really good.
What's the
so
one?
So maybe that... Sunday when I come home, you know, when I come home, I cook on Sundays. That's day that, when no matter, you know, how many flights it takes and how tired I am, when I come in on Sunday, that's family day. So that's when I throw on Sinatra and Dean Martin and cook up a big Italian meal and try and down some wine.
Nice.
So that'll be Sunday.
What's that Bandol one? Is that always
eight? Bandol is French.
Right. But what so is that a Merlot or is that a
No, that's Bandol is a I think it's its own is it its own grape?
But they just make a bunch of different kinds?
Yeah, well, no. They make there's different vineyards that make Bandol. But it's they make they're really famous for their rosé.
Oh, okay.
And there's but the red wine is the one that I really like, and that was from that I learned from Jim Harrison, the guy that was writing so much. He wrote A Really Big Lunch and all of these. He loves eating and drinking, and he's just like this. He was an animal. He was just like an animal for like the finer things,
like Hemingway.
Yeah, exactly, and. The Bandol red is like, it's an okay wine. It grows in a really tough place on limestone. It's like this tough part in the south of France, southeastern part of France, where it's tough to grow stuff. So the grapes are like tougher. They're hardier.
Yeah.
So the wine, like if you were to taste this Cabernet, it would be kind of like soft. And then you would drink that and it'd feel a little sharper.
Yeah.
Until... you mix it with food. It completely changes it. When you drink a Bandol and you have it with meat, it just turns into something that's just amazing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's one of the first times that I really, really noticed the difference of that. I'm not, you know, I don't think about pairing and that all that much other than the basics. But this is Morvedre is the grape. Morvedre. It has to be at least 50% of that wine, of that with Grenache and some salt, occasionally Syrah and Carignan. You know,
yeah,
these are all the.
But it's just like they just make a red wine with it. That's what they call it.
Yeah, and it's just Bandol because that's the region. And like Domaine Tempierre is one of the really good ones. They're so good. I'm looking at it online right now, and I'm salivating like Bella when when I break out like red meat.
Well, the one I read about was the like Burgundies. Like, there's one famous Burgundy in Paris, right? That was the guy. Did you ever watch that documentary, The Sour Grapes?
I don't think
so. You should see that. It's pretty interesting. It's kind of like when people do get so sophisticated that they think, you know, this guy will say... you know, this is a $50,000 bottle of wine, and they're just trying to, like, show off.
Right.
And it ends up being, like, a fake.
Yeah.
And
I know.
That's what the guy who made the Burgundy in France is the one that caught him. Because he's like, no, that's not mine. Like, you can't.
Oh, really? Because
there really is no copyright to any of this stuff. Like, you can just write anything on a bottle. There's no stealing or anything. So he just felt like it was, like... you know, people like his was 200, you know, 300-400 years old. So it's like if people think that that fake thing is mine, then that's a problem. So we have to like figure out a way to.
Yeah, I'm sure there's tons of scale. You know, all these different regions. Like when it says that it has to be 50% of that grape.
Yeah,
there's a government association that comes in and checks it and makes sure that everybody and all of like in if you get Chianti in Italy or you know, there's everybody has like their ruling body that makes sure that everybody, no one's scamming and all the rest of it. You know, I'm sure there's
How crooked is that?
I know. I'm sure there's a lot of monkey business that goes on. But when you get like something that you really like, like if you liked Silver Oak or you liked Domaine Tempierre, which is the Bandole and Ochette and Eau de Pop, and you really just drink that for a while or get a bunch of bottles and through the year keep drinking, like you just start to learn it. You start to, like, it's like, you know, that's my brand. That you start to understand the subtlety of it. And you, you can, then you, then it gives you a basis to just compare other stuff to it. And you start to see maybe that you were, you like something better after a certain point. But it's like, rather than try and think, I have to learn everything there is about every California wine or every French wine, just kind of like pair off. If you get a, for me, if you get a little story behind it, like Jim Harrison, this great author who I love, he loves this wine. I want to drink that wine. That right there, I'm already in. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
I just picture him drinking this in his Upper Peninsula cottage in Michigan, you know, and making his trout that he caught in the stream and how he writes about it. I'm already, I'm on board.
Yeah.
And that just gives you a basis for it. You know, rather than just going something random, I think anything that comes with a story, and that's why like wine tastings, that's why they want you to go do it. You remember when you went to the Silver Oak Winery with your girlfriend and you were there and you had that great night, and you know, it just gives you a little attachment to it.
Well, it's tough because it's kind of how you want to be, right? Like, you know, people who get to a certain age, they don't listen to new music, they don't try new food, they don't try anything.
Yeah.
And it's because it's hard, because you want to be comfortable, you want to try, you know, you want the stuff that you know is good.
Yeah.
But then when you do try something and it like wows you like that, you know, it's like Tom Petty's Maxwell House coffee, you know, you wouldn't think a guy would love it that much, but it's like if you make the perfect cup, like that's better than any, you know, so.
I think that there's something to all of that. It's just so you can, you know, a little knowledge goes a long way, I think. Speaking of Tom Petty, I watched that Echoes of Laurel Canyon.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The documentary about all the music that came out of here that you were talking about. Yeah, it was good. I really liked it. Jacob Dylan was the executive producer.
Right.
And they were talking with Tom Petty and Brian Wilson. And,
yeah, those were great interviews.
Yeah, really good.
Because I saw Brian Wilson perform.
Right.
And it like makes you kind of uneasy because you want him to do well, but then you're like... He's like, he's late 70s now.
I think, sure.
Which is crazy. But he never, people didn't realize, I still didn't realize that he never toured. He just wrote the songs in the studio.
Right.
Gave, you know, taught those guys how to sing it. And then they all went out there.
He never toured?
No.
Even when they were young?
Never.
Wow.
He stayed home. And that's what, you know, all the crazy stories are about, like him. You know, he his whole studio was filled with, like, sand.
Right, yeah.
And he would, like...
living room.
Yeah, yeah. And he would just have all these, like, do everything by himself. He just knew exactly what he wanted and kind of just told everyone what to sing.
It's amazing when all these other great artists talk about him. It's like, there's no doubt this guy was a genius.
Right. He was especially like the Beatles, you know. They're like, they did Sgt. Pepper after they listened to Pet Sounds.
Yeah. And it was amazing, too, watching him talk about all the different studios that he would record in for a single song. Just because he can get echo from this studio and then go across town in L.A. to another studio because that was good for strings. And he was just hearing things that nobody else was hearing.
Yeah, I like, you know, because a lot of those, what the Buffalo Springfield and all those bands that nobody really, they don't have like a huge following, but you see how important they were to like everybody else. They're like,
so crazy watching young Neil Young and Stephen Stills in his cowboy hat.
Right.
I mean, just so powerful and young and just great artists at the beginning of where they were headed. It was just so moving, right? Just to see them.
Well, who's the McGuinn? Roger McGuinn?
Yeah.
He's the one guy. Like, I don't know if people really know that guy, but apparently, like, that 12-string guitar was, like, the sound of the 60s.
Yeah, that,
much.
Like, broke everything open.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was really good. Why do you think there's no Bob Dylan in it?
I don't think he does anything. Like, he, even that... That
well, that's
one,
his son, right? Jacob
the one
Dylan.
Sideshow thing was half fake, you know? Like
yeah.
So I think he just doesn't like
Does
do
he
stuff.
Know Jacob Dylan?
I think so.
Does he know him well or maybe not so much?
I mean, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, he grew up, yeah. He was like raised by them, I guess. Uh-huh. But I don't, I'm sure growing up in that shadow, you're probably trying to do your own thing as much as possible. But
it's an amazing thing that Jacob Dylan is, so you think about that the whole time you're watching him. He's yeah. a great musician. He's very, you know, charismatic.
Made
guy.
Some great music. Like, there's people still love that band, and he just doesn't really do much.
Yeah. He was, I mean, he's really, despite being in that shadow, which is a huge obstacle,
mm-hmm.
he's legit. He's
what
great.
Was your, my favorite story was the, remember the Michelle Phillips is talking about how, like, she was in LA and all this cool stuff's happening. We got to move there. And her husband yeah. or whatever was like, well, the music business in New York, Greenwich Village, we can't leave.
Yeah.
And then, like, he wakes her up, like, and sings her California Dreaming.
Yeah, All the Leaves Are Brown.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
I wish I was in LA.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And then they moved after that.
Yeah.
That's kind of crazy.
But he never would have written it if he wasn't in New York.
It's true. You right? do feel that. Like, that's what I was... I think I watched that when I was in somewhere. I was, like, in Chicago, and it's like, oh, wow, yeah. It
yeah.
does make it feel, like, amazing to be there.
I know. It really made, like, all those shots of L.A. where you... Like, we always look at Laurel Canyon as this tough road that's always filled with traffic that you're trying to get through to get somewhere.
Yeah.
And then to like have that overview shot, it's probably with a drone, just like skimming through the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
It looks so great, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It looks like, oh, this is a very cool, each home is different from the next.
Right.
And it's these winding roads and palm trees and wooded areas. And the whole thing looked so relaxing and great. You're like, oh, I should be grateful to be driving through there.
Yeah. I mean, that's what, you know, they don't talk about it, but. You know, whenever somebody moves to New York and they say how much they hate L.A.,
yeah,
and I'm just like, have you seen any of it? Like,
right.
Everything's so different. Like, you can live on the beach. You can live in Laurel Canyon, like in the trees and the,
yeah.
you know, the canyons. And
I think people just get caught up in whatever they're trying to achieve here that they,
yeah.
you don't see anything because you're just looking at your emails and wondering why no one's calling.
But, I mean, that street also is like, you know, Jay-Z recorded his first big album there, like Dr. Dre.
How about Houdini's house?
Yeah, that's up there.
Can you tour that?
Well, there's some kind of weird thing about whether or not the one that they're saying was really owned by him. Like, there's one that's...
Oh, really?
Yeah. But they all turned into, like, I think Jackson Browne and Glenn Frey and all those guys, like, lived in a house up there, like, above and below each other.
Yeah.
And, like, wrote songs.
It makes you feel like we should be doing cooler things while we're here. Like, we should be just smoking tons of weed and...
Making music?
And yeah. and telling jokes to each other. I don't know. It seems like... I mean, we do perform a lot. We are, you know, we're using some of that spirit, but right. I don't think maybe we're as decadent as we're supposed to be. Like, maybe we're supposed to be really going a little nuts.
I did, well, I do have a confession to make.
Uh-oh. Here we go.
I'm trying to think. It might have been after I saw that documentary or something else, but I ended up purchasing a beginner...
Guitar.
Electric guitar.
Ooh, you're inspired.
Which I've never had before.
That's exciting.
And it was, like, really cheap. It was, like, one of those sales, and they gave you, like, an amp and a...
Nice. There's nothing better than going and buying an instrument.
In, like, 3 months of, like, these Fender plays, you know, because everything's on YouTube anyway, but they have these lessons on a Fender app that they teach you. They'll either teach you chords or, like, a song if you want to learn it. It's pretty cool.
That's so
cool. It's just you got to make time for it. So
it's a good thing to kind of fill in the gaps when if you're not reading or whatever, just to sit with your guitar. It's a
yeah.
good way to pass the time. I have not touched that guitar that's behind you
right.
in, like, a year. I used to play all the time.
Really?
Yeah, and I don't even touch it.
When did you learn or when did you first start?
When I was when I was really little, I learned from I took lessons,
mm-hmm.
like in sixth grade.
Oh, yeah?
And my teacher would come to the house, and he was a heroin addict. And I didn't realize it. He was like a really little guy. He had like a little goatee, and he carried this giant guitar, and he was definitely strung out, which I used to my advantage.
Right.
He was just a mellow guy, and he would fall asleep in the middle of the... He would nod out in the middle of playing, and I never practiced. So I quickly realized if I don't wake him up, I can let him nap for the half hour. And then at the end, I would just sit there. And then at the end, I would strum and wake him up and be like, okay, that was great. I'll see you next time. And I wouldn't get in trouble for not practicing.
Oh, man.
And then I didn't play because I was running around doing sports and I just wasn't dedicated to doing it. But then when all my sports were over senior year, I broke it out and really started playing a lot. Mm-hmm. Once like football and all that was over, I started playing and just teaching myself with tablature so you could like visualize the chords. And I started playing a lot of Neil Young, and I just taught myself and I just kept playing, and you know, mostly chords. But then I just played pretty heavily for like the next several years.
That's
then,
cool.
Yeah, just have some kind of basis so I can pick it up and I know the chords and can noodle around. But
did you play like an instrument in like elementary school? Did you learn like notes and stuff like that?
No, not to like read music.
And really?
No.
You were never in the band? You never had to play like the trumpet or anything?
No, just the flute. When we all had to do the recorder.
Oh. Yeah, that doesn't count.
The sock, that was it.
No, we had to do a band. We
you
had
did?
To, yeah. I played alto saxophone for like 2 years.
Like John Coltrane.
And then you get to middle school and you show up at band and it's like it's all nerds.
Right.
And you're just like, oh, nobody I know is in here. It wasn't nothing against them if like I fit in there, but I was like, I didn't know any of these people.
Yeah.
And it really starts to like separate people, you know, when you play sports or what. That's why there's such a divisive thing. It seems like now everybody does everything, which seems kind of cool.
I know. It is cool. We're always amazed at how many like athletic kids are in the band or like in choir. Like in my kid's school, like they do everything. There's no like beating everybody up. Everyone sees the value in everything. I'm sure there's some of it in some schools or whatever.
So my when I learned was my freshman year of college, I was playing basketball and the blow off class for athletes was introduction to classical guitar. And it was this really stoner teacher and we learned a bunch of like Pink Floyd and Beatles songs, and it was all like baseball and basketball players. So I actually learned like, you know, the classical stance, like when you have the guitar in between your knees and you play with your fingers. So I don't even know how to play with a pick. I'm just learning how to use it
now. I can't wait till we form our band.
I know. This is going to be really sad.
It's going to be so sad.
Will they let us play at Largo if we...
God, it's going to be like a Flomax commercial.
Does that make you depressed when you see people so amazing, like on Live From Here? Does it make you want to play, or are you just like...
No, it really makes me realize how much of a small little hobby it is of mine, like to just kind of try and maintain some rhythm. And there are things like when Chris plays at Live From Here with these great musicians, just watching them rehearse and stuff, they have a whole nother language. They have deeper understanding and feel for it all that I love listening to music. I listen to a ton of like, you know, jazz and classical, and I appreciate it only through repetition and understanding that it makes me feel okay. Those guys know everything that's going on in such a deep, deep level that you realize, you know, it's just fun to sit in my room and noodle with.
Yeah, there's a really cool thing going on now where so when I was in high school, we had a band like play like Thunder, like AC/DC songs, like while we were warming up for basketball.
Right.
So one of the guys, his name's Mike Wu, and, you know, he was like a bass player and, you know, had long hair and everything and, you know, ended up, I think he works at IBM or one of those. Like, he's a smart guy.
Yeah.
And just always had it as a hobby and plays, you know, just at the bar or whatever once in a while.
Uh-huh.
So my other really good friend, Dean, his son Cooper, became like a drummer, like drummed all through high school, was playing in like bands and bars while he was in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's maybe 20 now, and he's in all these cool bands. Like he plays jazz, plays everything.
Wow.
And there was like a kid in our town, his name's Randy McStein, who like could play Voodoo Child when he was like 10 years old and was like famous.
Yeah.
So they actually performed in, what was that theater we performed in, Glenmont, like Pennsylvania? It's like a big, huge theater.
Keswick?
Keswick Theater.
Right.
They opened for like this big band. So it's my buddy's kid, this Randy McStein, and Mike Wu, who was, you know,
yeah,
basically kind of like, you know, put this hobby aside, and now he's playing in this huge theater, and he's just like, I can't believe this,
that's
man.
That's amazing.
Crazy, you know? So
that's cool. Yeah, that's not happening with me. All right, man. Well, this was great. Glad to see you here at the compound. Are you around next week?
Yes, I have next week.
Me too.
I'm
two
here
in a row.
Like next Friday. So.
Ah, what a treat.
Yeah, this will be exciting.
After I go to Wisconsin this weekend, I think I'm here through Thanksgiving, which is
oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Nice.
That'll be good. So we'll knock a couple of them out. That'll be good. All right, everybody, go to paulsawebsite.com. Make sure you look up where Paul is headed. Go to tompapa.com for all the rest of it. You all know that stuff. Enjoy your life.